Jesus in the everyday, me and you. The good news and shoes.
This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good news in shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Oh, we're on.
You're on.
So much for religious philosophy. One of the things that happens with our group, you have to understand that we have a messy Jew here, messianic.
Right.
Come on, Alan, jump in there.
Okay.
Well, there he is.
Okay. As a special guest, and we also have Pastor Dave, who is a practicing preacher.
Oh yes.
Pastor.
Every now and then.
And we have Pastor Tom, who he has been labeled retired. And so when we start these shows, like a half an hour, 15 minutes before we get in, we start discussing scripture on occasion. Now, the biggest problem we have is we got two really strong Bible-toting guys here that they do this for a living. And they've gone to school and been edumacated on top of all that. And us two laymen, and
but Alan, what does that mean? We shouldn't challenge?
Well,
we
should
want to be edumacated.
We got how many commandments were broken on the way down, you said?
Said they broke five of them on the way down, so Moses only had 10 left.
Only had 10. That's what he told me.
According to Mel Brooks.
I think it's healthy to be challenged in an appropriate way. How else do we answer questions if there aren't any questions to answer?
You realize, if there's a Christian alive that has never doubted his faith, I have a problem believing that person, because everybody has doubts about everything.
Certainly.
And listen, we become committed Christians, we make an open pledge, but that doesn't mean that we always... So that's the reason I think one of the things that Vince Rosino, CPA, Joe Martech, financial advisor, really enjoy doing when we meet with Dave and Tom is challenging certain parts of the book and making sure we're interpolating
correctly.
Well, right. Either that or the way we want.
that part doesn't work out.
That part doesn't work. Because I remember my favorite preacher, when he would teach, that was his thing. He says, I don't preach, I teach. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's the definition of a rabbi, right?
Absolutely, a teacher.
A teacher. Mm-hmm. Well, in order to be a good teacher, you have to know your stuff. Now, what he used to do, he would dissect any passage in the Bible, and of course, most of it, according to him, was written in Greek originally, which now you have interpretations of certain words. Like English, we can have one word that has four and five different definitions.
Right. Depending on how you say it.
And how you use it and how you say it.
Exactly.
So, we started off with a conversation a week or two ago, and then Vince and I, when they weren't around, we talked about it behind their backs, and now we brought it up in front of their backs. And now Tom
brought it up in front of their backs. Me, I always get these slings and arrows. Because, you know, I've been studying the Bible very intently for the last 2 years, and so I'm learning a lot. Mm-hmm. And so I'd like to kind of go over what I've learned to see if I'm interpreting properly. So that's why I challenge the pastors. I come in here, they'll make a statement, I'll say why.
So you know what Tom's doing right now? He's digging in the book again.
He is. He's going to come in here and show me.
Come in there and show us.
That it's an Old Testament philosophy that carried over into the church age.
Well, now here's where, now anybody wants to jump into this conversation, Alan, including you, We can spend 10 or 15 minutes on this.
Well, it's a Christian radio station. Although I'm sure that the listeners right now would like to know something about finances, accounting, taxes,
not necessarily.
Law.
We'll talk about all that. But let's
wait a minute. In the Bible, the second most talked about topic outside of the Lord himself is finances. So we're right on point talking about finances.
That's what I mean.
Absolutely. So here comes the question where this is where we started, and we get rudely interrupted because we had to do this program live. So we might as well continue on, and Tom's hiding out in the corner, is that a lot of the Old Testament flows into the New Testament, some of the rules. Well, here comes Joe Martek stirring the pot. I said, uh-huh. So as Christians, we're supposed to keep a kosher kitchen. I can't eat shellfish, and I can't eat any pork.
Well, that was the proposition.
Or cloven hoof.
Somebody said to us.
So now Tom
carries is over. It all carries over.
It all carries over.
I said, no, it doesn't.
It does. So that's where we are. And what we're talking specifically, I'm not going to tell you. But this was a generality that we are putting Tom on the spot over there. Is he out there sweating?
He doesn't look like he's sweating.
No.
He never sweats.
He never sweats.
But he is starting to look more and more like a familiar figure out there.
Look, Dave, are you listening?
I am. I just have 2 points to make.
Okay.
One is, 3 points, but they're all connected. One is the Old and New Testament really meld together. They were never intended to be seen separately. Christians don't study the Old Testament as much as the New. Secondly, is that one of the big things Jesus wanted his church to know, and it certainly happened, you know, after his ascension, what's the next thing? Is the day of Pentecost. Mm. The gift of the Spirit. Jesus promised the Holy Spirit given to the church to enable them to be the church. And then, this is under that second part, part A, is that the Holy Spirit's job, there's many works the Holy Spirit does. One of them is to enable us to interpret God's word today, Bible being that written part, but to interpret that. And for whatever, you know, for the larger church, for my individual life, and anything in between.
And third?
And third, I forgot, because I'm an old guy. But, I mean, I have those two.
How come I resemble that? 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. That's toll-free from any place. This is a talk show. We have Vince Rizzino, CPA. Not only CPA. I have a buddy of mine that's got a degree. He's a CPA.
No.
Yeah. Cleaning, pressing, and alterations. He runs a cleaner's.
I thought it was a constant pain in the you-know-what. Yeah.
Anyway. Okay. Not only is Vince a certified public accountant, he is also a forensic CPA, which makes him court-recognized as an expert witness. And in his youth, When you were a Ute.
I used to teach,
yeah.
Not at Columbia. It was another fine school.
Another fine
State
school.
State University of New York.
You know, that's kind of got
Old
a good...
Old Westbury campus.
Yeah, Old Westbury's a nice place.
Yes, it's very nice.
Anyway, we also have Alan Love, retired guest... Wait a minute.
He's not a retired guest.
Who happens to be a retired prosecuting attorney from the great state of Wisconsin, which, by the way... the great state of Wisconsin's governor was on the tube today on CNBC touting the lowest unemployment rate in the United States.
Wow.
Pretty good. Yeah.
That is good.
Scott Walker is a tremendous story. I had the pleasure of working for him after a pension scandal in Milwaukee County in 2001. When he ran for county executive, and he was a young Republican legislator at the time, and he wound up winning that position. It was the first Republican to win an election in Milwaukee County in Milwaukee County's over 150-year history.
Wow, that's impressive.
Well, anyway, Scott Walker is a very impressive guy, and he's done a really good job. And you know, he's also a very... strong bipartisan person. He's more believable than a lot of politicians out there. I admire the man.
He is a person that he doesn't care what party you are, who you are, what you look like. If you want to talk to him and have a cogent conversation about something, he's more than happy to talk with you.
And he's shown it. He's got a lot of testicular strength.
Yeah. Next, after that, we were done now with the guest. You got an awful lot of billing there for our guest, you know. We have
just wait till prayer and praise time.
Yeah, wow. Right.
When does that hit us? About 4:50.
October, yeah.
Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, critical part of the group, because those of you that have lived in Florida since 1992, when Hurricane Andrew hit and it put about 10 or 15 insurance companies out of business, realized that the dramatic changes that have happened in Florida because of the hurricanes, and the independent insurance agent became a really, really critical person. Now, also, Pastor Dave is sitting here, who we'd give very little credit to because he really doesn't do much. But in the meantime,
no, he's the glue that keeps it all together.
I can turn you off and on.
You look a bit like
there you go.
Now that you look a bit like Elmer.
Elmer.
Ooh. Elmer's glue.
Oh, the glue that
holds us together.
Yeah,
right?
He is Elmer. He glues everything together. 1-888-222-1-8990.
Class, this is important. Keep that number next to the phone. In between some humorous activities, we will talk some serious stuff. Now, it's hard to pay attention and figure it all out, so I'm asking you to pay attention. Dan Warren, independent insurance agent. Next member was Greg Fasula, attorney. The word attorney normally does not endear people. They oftentimes are arrogant and pretentious and not user-friendly. Greg Fasula happens to be one of the finer people you'll ever meet in your entire life. He is a good person. He will help people and go out of their way. In fact, just as a story that's going right now, and this is a lady that might be listening on the radio today, a particular lady had called in a long time ago, and her son had died 6 years ago, and he had a 401k, and the people that he was employed by would not communicate with her. My office then got involved, and we started communicating, and the people started to communicate with us. Then they finally sent us a letter saying, no, here's what happens. You, meaning his mother, is not a named beneficiary. They said an estate has to be opened. Now, opening an estate normally necessitates an attorney, and it costs money. Mm-hmm. Mom's not rich, and the son's 401k could have $50 in it. It could have $5,000. We don't know. So they would not communicate with my office anymore, so I gave that to Greg Fasula. Now, Greg is now going through the process of contacting them, and because he's an attorney, very often he has more clout than, say, a financial advisor, CPA, or a pastor, or who knows, just because the attorney label. And when he communicates verbally with them, if that doesn't work, he will write them a letter and ask them the value of the account to say, is it worth opening an estate, so that the money can be transferred to mom. If it's a couple $300, it's not going to be worth it. But if it's a few thousand, it's going to be worth it, because no matter what happens, somebody has to get paid and the court has to get paid. You just don't get to do this thing without spending some money. So I'm just
what's involved with opening up an estate, Joe, because normally one is created upon the death.
Well, but it has to go into the court system. You have to make a filing in the court system. Now what happens, let's just talk an estate real quick. On a few occasions, I've had a client die, and normally what I do, I tell my clients, look, and I want you to take my business card, put it on your file box, wherever you keep your important papers, and put a note to it that says, I'm dead, call Joe. Now, and I'm not kidding, literally that's what I say, because I have then had the kids call me, which I have not met, and the kids say, Joe, dad died, and there's a note here that says I'm supposed to call you. We need to get an attorney so we can settle the estate. And I said, I hate to tell you, I know what dad has, and we're going to settle the estate right now in 1 minute, and it's not going to cost you a dime. Number one, dad has a transfer on death agreement at the bank. You're named as beneficiaries. You show down there with a death certificate. You guys will get the money. Number two, dad had an annuity contract with named beneficiaries. You're it. And literally, all you have to do is get the death certificate, sign some papers, and you get the money. The rest of the stuff was peripheral. I'm talking a couch and a chair and who cares stuff. So literally, sometimes even though this, quote, estate is technically opened, it's not, because the court has to be, am I right, Alan?
You're right, absolutely.
The court has to be addressed and given this information in order to officially open it, and there's court costs. Courts can't afford to do something for free. Anyway, so literally, what we try to do with this program is not only educate us, but educate our clients and our prospects, because we have, not including Alan and Pastor Dave, over 200 years worth of experience in our group.
That's why he keeps calling us old guys.
Yeah, and if I add Alan and Dave, we're up to 3,000 years or something.
I like the word venerable instead of old.
Yes.
Venerable?
Venerable. 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 That's a very good name. I like that title.
Venerable. Venerable. You know, yeah. That actually sounds like you should be good.
Yeah. Well, there's a potential there.
Well, if you include my heritage, it's over 5,000 years.
Right.
Well, all of us, if we go all the way back to Adam, I hate to tell you, we're older than that.
That's right. 6,000 years at least.
Anyway, next member of the group is Ms. Victoria Lloyd Remax of Stewart. Why is she important? Well, if you live through the debacle this last recession hit, real estate became a monster problem. Values plummeted. There were new words, not only deedbacks and foreclosures, but short sales. Somebody with credibility and integrity and a lot of experience became a very important member. And this lady has only been in real estate since 1980, maybe 78, but 80.
And she's only 30, Joe.
And she's only 30. This is tough. You know, women really look. They get to skip many years when they're counting. I had a lady that worked for me years ago, and she had dark hair, and she was 72 years old. And I said to her one time, I said, Virginia, do you dye your hair? She goes, no. And I said, wait a minute. You're Jehovah's Witness. You're not supposed to lie about that. And she goes, we're allowed to lie about our hair color.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh. Anyway, now, for this is a joke, but the bottom line was, you know, she did certain questions you don't ask women. And that was one. And she was not happy with me. Anyway, then we have Mike Polis, mortgage broker. Now, as critical as Victoria was, Mike was even more critical because, if you remember, through the height of the recession, they said there was no mortgage money available. Well, there was always mortgage money available. The USDA program is 100% financing if you qualify for it. It was always available. VA mortgages were always available. FHA mortgages were always available. Conventional mortgages started to have some problems. But if they were under a certain amount of money that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac bought them, which is the main groups that buy all these mortgages, the criteria changed minimally to a couple of words. And it was back to the old system was, you have to prove you can afford it.
Well, it's amazing when the government backs the loans, Joe, how much flexibility they have.
Yeah, what a criteria. Can I afford it?
Yeah.
So the way you had to prove that you can actually make the payment. So right. How do you prove it? You have to show income. And then if you have debt, there's a difference between your income and debt that says you can afford to make the payment. If you don't meet those criteria, you don't qualify.
Well, the old days, it was you had to produce things, Joe, like W-2 forms.
You still do.
Bank statements
you
for 3 months. But in the heydays, they did away with that. All you needed was a mirror that you could blow into and show that you were alive. Now it's gone back to the old system, and it's a little tougher, but you can do it. Michael attests to that. Well, you can find you some
key,
money.
The key is this, and what Mike Polis does, and we talked about this on the morning show, is put the horse and the cart in the proper order. And the way you do that is, before you even go look at real estate, before you get started, you call somebody like Mike Polis and say, now, Mike will do this. A lot of people don't. He'll talk to you on the phone, and he'll run a credit report while you're on the phone, and he'll tell you within 10 or 15 minutes, yes, no, maybe, and what you have to do to correct the situation. And it might take you 6 weeks, 6 months, or a year if you have problems to correct them. And the way it works when it comes to qualifying for a mortgage, if you had problems in the past, let's say there was a death in the family, or let's say there was a major medical expense, there's a letter that has to go with that explaining why that was there and what you are doing with that. And if you come up to an agreement, let's say with a hospital that you're paying them $100 a month for the rest of your life, and then they accept that, you're okay. But there might be a judgment that is now being treated, but that has to be addressed. And what you cannot do when you're applying for a mortgage is try to hide anything, because there is nothing that you can hide. So you're going to expose everything in the world. And literally, Mike will walk you through that. And I'm a little more blunt than Mike is, but Mike is a very, very sweet guy. But the reality is, he's there to help you qualify and let you know. So there's nothing like wanting a $500,000 house and all you can afford is a $150,000 house.
And now they focus, Joe, more on your ability to pay. They're looking at that monthly payment. Can you afford that?
Ability to pay was the criteria and is the criteria. So in between the gap, it fell apart. And like you said, smoke, if you could fog a mirror, you got a mortgage. And it was very sad, but that's called life. Anyway, did I miss anybody? I think I got them all.
Did you give the phone number out, Joe?
One.
It's kind of quiet right now.
221-8990. keep that phone number close, 1-888-221-8990. So, what's new in the tax business?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, the government, I think yesterday, the day before, has now kiboshed the MIRAs, you know, the government-sponsored IRAs that they were, that was established during the Obama administration.
Explain that.
It was basically a way for the government basically to encourage you, giving you special incentive to put money into an IRA. It's a MIRA.
Well, what'd they do? What special incentive did
they? Well, it was employer. It was an employer government joint effort to get people to invest into a retirement program, and the government would pay in, or the government would allow you deduction, allow the employers to deduct, similar to now what you have with the 401ks. But it never took off because not many people took advantage of this. And so now I read yesterday that they just put the kibosh on it. Now, don't ask me any more about them because they never really took off.
Well, the key is this. A 401k is an employee-sponsored retirement plan where the employee...
Employer-sponsored.
Yeah, employer-sponsored. And the employee, let's say they match 3% of your pay. And let's say you make $50,000 a year. You can take 3% of that 50, which is $1,500, put it into that account, and you don't pay tax on it. And very often the employer will match and they'll put $1,500
in. And that's a pure gift.
You now have 100% return on that money in 1 year. This is the greatest thing since chocolate milk. So you always want to do that if you can. Now, should you put more than that into the account? Well, here comes a big depends. How sophisticated an investor are you? What are the investment options? If you're not positive on those, I would stay with the 3%. And what you need to do is to talk to somebody like me and say, hey, what are the investment options? I'll look at them and say, here's what I would suggest based on your age. And I don't charge anything for that, just to help people. I'm going to take a call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Yes, hi. I had a question to ask.
Sure.
I know after a short sale, you may not get a pre-approval letter or pre-qualification letter. I don't know what the time frame is. If it's a year or two, if you have if you are able to show finance saving, and it's just a matter of waiting for that period or for that time, that penalty time.
I think if Mike Paulus was here, which we've talked about this regularly, the criteria changes constantly, and where it might have been 2 years a year ago, it may be down to 1 year now. But I think the main thing to do, you left your name and number. We'll have Mike Paulus give you a call tomorrow or the next day, and you can give him specifics, and he can tell you what the rules are now. Now, what happens is, just so you and everybody else that's listening, they are loosening up on the criteria for qualifying for mortgages, where it was tougher 2 and 3 years ago. Today, it's gotten not as easy as it was, but they're looking at things like the short sale, as not as negative as, say, a foreclosure.
But are they still given interest rate at 8 or 9 just because you've had a short sale?
Not necessarily. Now, here comes so you're looking for an absolute answer. What happens with a guy like Mike, he would run a credit check, he would look at the short sale, look at the circumstances, then he has number of lenders, and he would go and say, okay, fine, based on the criteria, you might be a 4, 4.25, 4.5, whatever it might be. Then let's just say you can't get any better than 7 or 8, he may suggest that you wait 6 more months
and then try again.
But all of that he would do with you over the telephone, so you don't have to waste time and effort and no cost.
Oh, that's beautiful. I'd love to get in touch with him.
You left your name and number with Pastor Tom. We'll have Mike give you a call tomorrow and let him educate you and help you any way we can.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. And that's a really good question because, you know, Vince, like the tax code, everything changes almost every day.
I think Mike did mention 2 years, but I couldn't swear to it. That's his bailiwick.
And it might be. Point is, like he was talking, now there were no construction loans. Now there's construction to permanent loans. Mm-hmm. There's things that are changing constantly in the thing. And with the economy getting better and unemployment very low, the risk factors that the underwriters are looking at today are pretty mitigated. They're not as dramatic as when in the height of the recession, I mean, people were walking away like crazy because they lost their jobs, they're losing their houses, they're losing everything. You know, it was bad times.
I tried to set up a short sale, but they said I was too tall. No, just kidding.
Don't quit your day job.
It's the sad thing.
You know
thing,
what my son
one.
Would say if he was sitting here and I said that?
Bada bing, bada boom.
He would say, boy, you're so corny.
That's your grandson, right?
No, my son.
Your son.
Your son, yeah.
I got to teach.
Vince, I have a question regarding IRAs and Roth IRAs.
Oh, okay.
For a younger person, say under the age of 50, would it be wise to try and convert to a Roth IRA as soon as possible because of the long-term compounding tax-free of that money?
That is a multifaceted answer, but let me see if I can generalize it for you.
And I got an opinion after he's done. Okay, that we always agree.
No, we don't always agree. But on the Roth IRA, if you're saying converting, so I'm assuming he has an existing 401k plan.
Or an IRA.
Yeah. Yeah, you can. The Roths you could convert. With the IRA, you wouldn't be converting. You would be just transferring it to another IRA, I suppose.
Well, you have an IRA. You can convert it to a Roth.
But you'd have to pay income taxes on it to do it. And it would all be.
But you're paying a smaller amount than you are if you wait until you reach mandatory distribution.
But there's only one problem.
Not necessarily. See, there comes the magic. What you're saying is not necessarily true.
Okay.
But go ahead.
Yeah, well, let's go back to the beginning. So you convert and you pay your taxes. So you're saying, well, if you're 50 years old, you've got maybe 25 or 20 years more of employment that you're going to accumulate tax deferred. Right. And is that better for you? Well, it could be, but the environment right now is that we all expect that taxes are going to go down, for example. At least everybody's expecting.
That's what they're hoping for.
And if the taxes are going to go down, then it might be someone's best interest to consider converting, but not now, not today. But when the rates do go down,
but there's
converting
other,
at a lesser rate.
But here's where Alan was going with that. Just so you know, a Roth IRA, you're allowed to put $5,500 up to $6,500 a year into this account, and you pay tax on it.
Right, it's after-tax money.
Now, that money will grow, and there's no taxes when you take it out. You have to hold it for 5 years,
right?
But after a five-year period, so let's say you're 50, and you put in a $6,500 this year, next year, and the year after. Let's say you put in $20,000, and when you turn 65, 70, it's worth $100,000. You could take the whole $100,000 out at one time, tax-free, every time. That's it, just that simple. Now,
but I don't think that's what he was referring to.
Well, let me just
go into... He's referring to the financial aspect of time value of money.
Well, what he was saying is today, back to again, if I've got that $6,500, $15,000, $20,000, pick a number, if I convert it to a Roth today, I now have to pay the tax on that money at my ordinary tax rate. So let's say I'm making $50,000 a year and I have another $20,000. My income that year is going to be based on $70,000 and I have to pay tax on that $20,000. Let's say it's 20%. That'd be $4,000 in tax, right? Now, if it's $25,000, obviously, whatever the number is.
But you'd have to pay it when you took it out.
You have to pay it when you do
that
conversion.
So it's time value of money. What do you expect to be paying in taxes when eventually you have to take it out versus what it is now?
Here comes the magic question. When you turn 70 and one half, any retirement account or almost all retirement accounts, you are supposed to start taking out at least your required minimum distribution, which is roughly 4% of the value of all that money that year when you turn 70 and one half. So let's say you had $100,000. You have to now take $4,000 out. I'm giving you a round number. It's not exactly that. And add that to your income. But let's say you're retired on Social Security. Say you got $2,000 a month Social Security and your wife has $2,000 a month Social Security. And then you've got another $2,000 a month in pension. So we have $4,000 Social Security, $2,000 in pension. Got $6,000 a month income. Mm-hmm. What's my tax rate? I know. Depends. Terrible question.
It depends. You can't do it in isolation. I don't know what other income they have besides that.
No other income.
Probably nothing. I mean, he's going to have a low income.
Stop right there. Probably no tax, and he's making $6,000 a month,
which is $72,000 a year.
And now, if he adds $4,000 to that, he doesn't pay any tax on that either, on that required minimum distribution. So here comes the question.
Well, that's not a required. You don't have one in the Roth, Joe.
When you're an IRA. When in regular, traditional IRA. Yeah. Not Roth, but regular traditional. I'm saying now he's got, and he didn't convert it to a Roth. The magic question that I have when I look at anybody when they bring this up is, what kind of income do you expect to have when you are officially an old person, 65, 70 years old. Now, nobody knows 100%, but say you work for the government, she works for the government, and you know exactly, and if you don't get fired, what's going to happen. We can plan a whole lot better.
No
so
doubt.
I think you have to look at each individual person very carefully if it's in their best interest to convert to a Roth or not.
Absolutely. And Joe gave you the long-winded answer, but yes, you have to look at every one of them individually to know whether it makes sense. And there's all these factors that Joe mentioned, absolutely right. You've got to consider, and sometimes it's hard to project.
It really is hard.
It's because they don't know themselves what they're going to look like 20 years from now or 30 years from now.
But what you, both of you have just done is you've basically shown the reason of why you need to go and talk with professional people like yourselves, because of the fact that people want in today's a snap, quick answer.
See,
but
it's
there's
not
no
easy.
Such thing.
I will tell you this. This is one of the more difficult questions because I have to look at each individual person, where they stand, what their projection. Let's take that same person, make them 40. And let's say they're married and he's 40 and she's 30. And they don't have children yet and they haven't bought a house yet. Well, I'm starting to get more afraid every second because certain things have to come out and happen between now and the time they get old, like buying a house, having children. So you have to put all of this stuff into the equation, and it is not easy.
Well, you're right, Joe, because a lot of times people put money into these retirement programs and find out they need the money. A couple of years later, they want to buy a house. They don't have any money for the down payment. Oh, let me go into the IRA or the 401k and take the money out. Well, guess what? That's an expensive proposition.
I just had a case with somebody you and I know extremely well, and he needed to get $40,000 to invest in an investment. Not an investment through me, but into something that he wanted it in. And he says, Joe, I need to get that $40,000 right away. So I went real quick and looked, and then I thought, holy mackerel, most of this money is in an IRA, and he's in the highest tax bracket. So
even
what's
worse,
that, 36?
39.6
plus a 10% penalty because he's under 50. So I called him up and I said, you take $40,000 out, you're going to lose $20,000 of this in taxes. I mean, you know, there's not a higher tax rate in the whole borrowing rate. So obviously he didn't do it. But he did not think things that we take for granted, the tax ramifications of taking money out. So what he's also, Vince is saying, young people that put money into retirement accounts before they've put the horse and the cart in the proper order, very often they end up taking the money out, paying the penalty plus the tax. We were joking today earlier with Veronica, and she said, if I was 25 and I had $5,000 into account, I'm going to a concert in California. And, you know, when you're 25.
Yeah, it's different. You don't think in those terms when you're 25.
There's not one of us here that can even remember that far back.
Oh, I can, Joe. I haven't lost my mind yet.
Yeah, well, you're close, though. 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. So when I also look at people saving money, remember we were talking about different types of 401ks, and there's a solo 401k
for those that are in business. Yes,
you take an individual, like a lot of realtors that say they're making $150,000-$200,000 this year, they can establish a solo 401k for that business and include his spouse in it if she's not working, and put up to $50,000 aside.
It's 53 for no, actually in 17 it's 54,000 max.
Isn't that something?
But it's based on compensation, so you got to be careful with that.
Yeah.
So you need to set up a payroll, and you must take payroll from your company, and then.
But that can be accomplished.
Yeah.
But you have to know the rules.
But you know the rules, and you have to basically comply.
That's all.
And you have to follow the formalities of it.
The key with complying is understanding who you're talking to. And Vince, this is one of the things when you set up this account. Here's what you have to do to comply so that the government doesn't get upset with you.
Right.
Hey,
exactly.
Everything has rules. You know the golden rule, right?
He who has the gold rules.
He who has the gold rules. So whenever we look at these accounts, I have.
That's another corny one.
I know it is.
But it's an old saying.
But I will tell you, like right now, I've get people that say, I'm going to convert, Joe, my retirement account from XYZ company, and I'm going to roll it over into an IRA, and you're going to manage it.
Right.
And how long does that take? And I says, well, expect at least a month. Maybe longer, because back to the golden rule. He who has the gold rules, and they're going to have rules, and for us to get them up, we can yell and scream all we want, but if we don't comply with the rules, we ain't going to get it. So my job is to make sure people understand that what could happen in a week or two is not. It's going to take a good part of the month. And then on top of that, we have the Department of Labor now, which has their rules on these things. Boy, they've just, everything is getting more and more difficult, but it is called the rules, and we just have to follow them. So my job is to educate you on what the rules are, and then to make sure that we just take it step by step.
Absolutely. So that was a long way of saying it's not a simple answer.
No.
It usually isn't.
Well, one thing
you need it as part of it. What Job didn't, let me just finish that thought. It's also, this is only a part of a greater plan. This should be just a piece, a slice of your overall plan.
Exactly.
And so, you know, you need to look at all the pieces.
And if you ever noticed in life, it doesn't always go according to plan?
Yes, but you have to have one.
You have to have one.
In order to do some planning.
And it can be modified, which over a period of time, I think all four of us here might have modified it. Now, CPAs never modify because they're always nearly perfect. You know,
never. Right?
Yeah,
there's only one perfect person in the world, Joe.
And he's not walking.
And he's not walking on the earth right now.
Well, you know, part of knowing the rules is what you gentlemen have to go through every year. You have mandatory continuing education requirements.
Thank you. I'm in the midst of that right now.
You know what happens is people say, "How many courses do you take a year?" I said, "I really don't know. It's just my compliance people tell me, Joe, you got to do this one. Now you have to do this one. Now you have to do this one," and they just keep coming along. There's
We have a little easier, Joe. We have to take 40 credits, but we need to take 24 in a specialty, and the rest we can do.
No clue. All I know is some years I have to take a lot. One of the perks of being old and being around a long time, I'm grandfathered.
You are?
I'm actually great-grandfathered in it. So they changed the rules for the younger people today and make it more difficult on the continuing education. But some of us that have been licensed for
20... Well, they give you life experience. That's the right thing to do.
And it's not a bad thing. You know, so I personally...
They give you credit for life.
But I like the continuing education courses. You might ask me why, Dave.
Why is that, Joe?
Because if I can pass them, it means I'm not fried.
You know, that's not a bad reason.
That's perfect. That's it. 1-888-221.
If I could pass it, I'm not fried.
Well, you know what? Listen, only Confucius got smarter with age, and he died just to get away from tests. So.
No, you know, it's not even part of getting, I guess smart is the word, but you know, the body of knowledge keeps growing. That's what it is.
Of course.
The body of knowledge keeps growing.
Well,
so
you know
what you learned last year has now grown to something 20% more. Tax code's now 75,000 pages or something.
And you got it all memorized.
I do.
Yeah, I know.
That in the Bible.
That all in the Bible, all memorized, right? We don't necessarily agree on what it says with Tom, but the key I'm trying to say is that nothing in life is simple, but what happens is when we look at Vince, CPA Forever, Joe Martek, Alan, all of us have been around a long, long time, so there's a lot. Dan Warren has the best way of describing it. He said, old age is an accumulation of mistakes.
That's true.
And what you've done is you learn from them. Right. Don't you remember when we were little and fathers used to say to us, learn from my mistakes. Uh-huh. You know, then we went out and made our own anyway and learned that sharp stick in the eye teaches you lessons.
Absolutely.
But after you get old, you say, you know, I've had enough sharp sticks in the eye.
See, but that's the toughest part about being a parent, Joe.
I know it is tough.
Is to watch your children making the same mistakes that you do.
I know, no matter
and
what
trying
you're
to convince them to do otherwise. Not that my children do it, and I don't want to get the wrong impression, but it's what
I
hear.
Wait till I talk to your daughter.
Yeah, no, don't tell her I said that.
Yeah, right. He's afraid of women to start with, especially his daughter and his wife. Anyway.
They're two powerful people.
Too powerful. 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. I want to throw in, I guess probably on a weekly or biweekly basis, I usually call Vince up when a new circumstance occurs. You'd think after 25, 30 years, you wouldn't have new circumstances, but it just seems like there's constantly something. Mm-hmm. And it's like this lady called about what's the length of time on a short sale. Well, that rule is going to change. And Mike is the only one that knows for sure. And I mean, literally, it could have changed from yesterday till today. Mm. It just things are happening that fast. In the mortgage business, the criteria for paperwork is getting worse, but the criteria for qualifying is getting less difficult. Talk about money for a minute. I've had two cases this last week specifically, where people were scared to death about investing. Can you imagine people being scared to invest?
Yes.
Yes.
I can.
I think almost everybody is scared to invest, except extremely sophisticated investors, which are often no smarter than anybody else, but they may know more stuff. So literally for the last couple of years, I've been a bit afraid of the market, watching the market get full. Most people look at the S&P 500 and the Dow as of right now saying they're at least fair priced, but by most estimations, they may be overpriced. Because when everything is moving well and everybody's happy, that usually means it's too late. So literally, if people say to me, Joe, should I jump into the market today? And I said, well, I can't say yes or no because nobody predicts the future, but we've had an extremely long, what they call bull run. Bull run means the stock market has gone up for a long, long time. And in fact, Alan, it might be the longest in history at this point.
Well, in one respect, it is. We have not had a 5% correction in the S&P since January of 2016.
So what happens is when you get these long periods of time where the market doesn't go down 10, 20%, usually it's waiting to do that. And most of us are watching and saying, I'm scared to say people should get in. So literally what I've been talking to people about is how about an insured investment. Insured. What's that mean? Well, I'm in the market. Let's say I'm in the S&P 500, and the S&P 500 this year has gone up, what, 10, 11%?
About
12%. So far from January 1st till August, whatever the date is today, I'm up 12%. That's pretty good for less than a year. In fact, it's better than pretty good, right?
Yeah, 12% is 1% a month, so you're doing better than 1% a month, which is historically not sustainable for the
exactly.
most part.
So now, should I get into the market? Well, I can't tell you yes or no. But let's say this. If we put a contract together with an insurance company says, here's what I'll do. You put this money in, and for the day you put it in, whatever you start with, if you're old enough, we'll guarantee you a 5% income on that for the rest of your life. So let's say you had $100,000. You don't have to have, but let's say you did. That's $5,000. Now, if you took that $100,000 and put it in a bank, you're going to get one, maybe one and a half. So you get $1,000 or $1,500. But if you put it into this insured contract, you get $5,000 worth of income, and you can start drawing on that 30 days from the day you start. Then you're in the market, and the market goes up the whole year. At the end of the year, on the anniversary, certain companies will look back and say, okay, fine, you went up from $100,000 to $110,000, let's just say. We lock that number in. And next year, you'll get 5% on 110. But let's just say during that next year, we hit this major correction and the market goes down 50%. So we had 110, now we're down to 55,000. Insurance company says, okay, this is where we kick in. We will guarantee you a 5% return based on that 110,000 that it stepped up to for the rest of your life, or until it gets higher than that 110, which might take 5 years, 1 week, 2 years, we don't know. But what they do is the insurance company is coming in and insuring that investment. So you know for fact, if you're stuck living to be 115, your income will never go down, but it can go up. They also, if you qualify for this, they have what's called a guaranteed death benefit, which oftentimes pays 5%. So back into the same example, I put in this 100,000, I take out 5,000, the insurance company says we add 5,000, you die, the market's down to $11.50, your family gets back what you put in. So what they do, they've got insurance on this investment. Is insurance free? No. What's the negative? Insurance companies get paid. How much do they get paid? Now don't take this to the bank, but this is a rough definition. It's around 3% a year, around 3%. Could be a little more, could be a little less, but I'm just giving you an idea. So let's say you had bought this same stock and you didn't go through a broker. It was not in a fund, mutual fund or an ETF, and there was no fees, you'd be 3% ahead. But the insurance company says, hey, we're going to take 3% to protect you. Now, it doesn't come out of your income. It comes out of what they call the account value. But the key is this. What happens is you now know that for the rest of your life, you're going to have this guaranteed income that can go up and can't go down. And that's the magic of this. Now, my compliance people say you have to say You have to know which insurance company you're dealing with and their claims paying ability. So we only want to deal with what I'm going to call the best companies in the business, the highest rated companies, which as Vince was sitting here and Alan, we don't want to deal with anybody besides that to start with because we want no aggravation.
It's got to be, you know, AAA rated company. Otherwise, it wouldn't
get the best ones you can.
Get the best you can. And even them, you never know.
Well,
but I suppose if they go under, Joe, we got bigger problems.
Well, you know, historically, yeah, there has not been any that have not paid. What happens is, I'm not supposed to talk about this, but guarantee funds, states have funds that protect people if that company is an admitted company. Just as the best example was Hurricane Andrew. Andrew put 10 or 12 or 13 insurance companies out of business that were homeowners companies. But if those companies were admitted to do business in the state of Florida, the state paid every claim. And they did. Now, you weren't necessarily the first to get paid because the paperwork became voluminous and there were so many claims. But the reality was, because of the state guarantee fund, people were protected. So they, most states, in fact, all states have a fund that protects us for all
types. Is it real money, Joe?
Pardon me?
Is it real money? They don't set up a trust fund for it.
Well, no, but you know, trust
fund makes
no...
The reason why I say that is there's so much debt on the state level and local levels now across the nation that none of them are in tremendous financial shape.
Well, but the key is this. These guarantee funds that have paid have never not paid in any state.
Because the insurance company, as you say, they're insuring the insurance.
They're insuring.
They're like reinsurers.
They're reinsured. Yeah. They're reinsured. And literally every company has to contribute. Every time an insurance contract is written, a money goes into this state fund.
I'm just wondering if there's a real fund. Or does, well, it go into the general fund like, you
know,
Social Security?
And I don't know, but the point I'm trying to say, I have never heard of one instance where the states did not pay when a company defaulted, when a company went out of business, because companies do go out of business. That's just called life. So, and I don't care if it's your automobile, your life, your health, whether it's an annuity, whatever kind it is.
Let me ask a devil's advocate question. Now, obviously, you just mentioned that the state of Florida will protect you if you're an admitted company.
Right.
Well, let's say I'm an unscrupulous person.
And I like that about you.
And I'm, I finally admitted it.
There right? you go, right. Right.
And I'm selling an insurance contract like you've described, where
non-admitted.
How does a person know that the company that they're dealing with is admitted?
Because there's two things to find out. Okay. Number one, if it's a household name, that makes life easy. Number two, you can get on the state of Florida's website. It's florida.gov, and ask that question. Is it an admitted company? Just that simple.
There's a list.
Now, one of the biggest companies in the world, Lloyd's of London, is not an admitted company. But they are the most powerful company probably on earth and the highest rated. They don't care about being admitted because they operate in every country on earth, in every state, and they take special risks. So not all non-admitted companies are bad. But the key is this. When you deal with most normal stuff, automobile, home, life insurance, health insurance, annuity contracts, you want to deal with an admitted company. And that's a real, real easy thing to check out. And the key is this. If you have an agent that doesn't know how to do that, you're with the wrong agent. Or doesn't want to do that. But all it amounts to is you go online and everything is done. And if that doesn't work, you can actually call them up. You know, some people say, I don't even have a computer. How do I do it? Okay, well, find out the number for the state of Florida for the State Insurance Commission, and bam, you can talk to a live person, and they'll look it up for you. 1-888-221-8990.
Yeah, and if you call that number, you'll probably talk with a live person, unless Tom is sleeping at the moment.
I don't know.
Is Tom sleeping out there?
I think he is.
Mm-hmm. No? Is he look? No, he's not.
He just waved. He just waved.
He waved.
He smiled.
He's smiling.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he's not asleep.
Oh boy.
Pastor Dave.
Sir.
What's new in your life?
Oh, where do you want to start?
I want you to tell me what a mutual fund is.
Okay.
See.
I got it. Here we go.
Here we go.
Vince and I buy a pizza.
Okay.
Right.
Got okay. it.
So far, so good.
People observe this pizza and they want a piece of it.
Right.
So we sell them a piece of that, and we collect a percentage of what that slice will generate as part of our fees. And you can buy small slice or a large slice. We may have 30 companies in there. We may have 100 companies in there.
He's doing pretty good.
Does it have
pepperoni or mushrooms?
I thought a mutual fund was that you and Vince were going to buy a pizza, and you put your money together to buy the pizza. And that was a mutual fund.
As long as it's half pepperoni.
That's called mutual funds. Right. That's mutual funds. Now, wait a minute. I only want a slice of that. So if the pizza costs $12, you put up $6, you put up $5. I'll only put up $1. I'm going to get one little slice.
That's right. You get a little tiny one.
Well, actually, we both put in $6, and we're selling you back $1's worth.
Now, that's exactly how it works.
Exactly.
If you use food, I can understand stuff.
You know, and that was the analogy I used. Just picture this big pie, and that Pastor Tom and Dave and Vince, they pool all their money, and they buy stock in 30, 40, 50, 100 companies, and then Joe Martek comes along and says, I want a little tiny piece of all those companies. And they say, fine, Joe, we will let you have a little piece of all those companies and the profits they make, but we are going to collect a fee, which is the mutual fund company. That's a real easy, short analogy. Is that fair?
Yes.
Now, are there negatives in a mutual fund and positives? Yes. The positive of a mutual fund are normal circumstances. Now, understand what I'm doing. I'm giving you broad generalities here, not specifics. I'm not mentioning any one company. But the broad generality is, if I've got 100 companies in that fund and one of them gets in trouble, I got 99 that might be okay. So I may not hit a home run if I had one company going straight up. But on the other hand, if I've got one company that went straight down and the rest are dinking along, I'm more protected. The word is called diversify. And that's what mutual funds do. They diversify.
So in your pizza analogy, if you had one slice that was pepperoni and it went bad, the whole pie didn't go bad.
Right.
You just lost the one slice.
Unless you don't like pepperoni.
Pepperoni, olive, black olives, and onions. That's
I love
my,
it. That's it. Mine, too. We're going to order pizza right after the show.
I want Italian sausage on mine, plus the pepperoni and onions.
Okay.
And what's important as far as your job, Joe, is you've got to try. There are thousands of mutual funds out there now. Mm. You've got to try and match your clients' goals and risk tolerance with a particular fund that will best suit that client.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, the other side of the coin is when I have the, quote, insured investment, it takes what looks like a mutual fund. They use different names for them, but they look and smell just like them. They just use a different name. And then we put the insurance on it in case the market collapses. Because historically, when the market takes a tank, the whole market goes way down 10 or 20 or 30%. It can affect every one of those companies in that pie. So nobody's happy when that happens. But on the other hand, the insurance company says, okay, fine, we'll pick up the slack. We're there to protect you, to make sure that your income stays, that you're protected. I joke about this, but it's not too funny. So let's just say that Vince goes out and he invests money, and he puts $100,000 in, and this contract has a guaranteed death benefit that guarantees the $100,000 plus 5% a year. And 360, and this is not exactly the truth on how a company works, but on a 364th day, he's dying. And the market went down to 50 grand, but if he waits one more day to die, his wife gets $100,000 plus $5,000. I tell her, keep you on life support.
if they're able to do it.
Hey, let me tell you, that doctor can keep you on life support if he gets a piece of the pie. Anyway, I'm...
We don't speak of those things.
Speak of those things. All I'm trying to say is there are a myriad of different options available. The key thing that you want to know is to get educated. I met with another common client of ours today. And, you know, a lot of times the forest and the trees are tough.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I first started in the business, Alan, somebody was explaining this stuff to me, and I couldn't get it past. It just was like a brick. I went and sat with them for 3 hours. All of a sudden, it made sense. But it took 3 hours to get past the trees before I could find the forest.
Well, in my case, I was licensed. What happened when I was licensed is 6 days after I was licensed, we had that 1987 computer crash where the Dow dropped 22% in one day.
Yeah.
And I thought my career was over.
Well, you weren't very pretty looking that day, that's for sure. But luckily, you hadn't had clients for a whole year that really got hurt.
Yes.
The key thing is goal on what people are looking for. There's different vehicles we can look at. There's different options. My job is to educate you, and I oftentimes meet with people two and three, sometimes four and five times before we do business, making sure they understand what they've got. Now, I've had some extremely sophisticated clients, extremely sophisticated, that no matter what I said, they couldn't get it passed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just called, Joe, I have to trust you. And my standard line was, thank God you can. Just that simple. That we're going to make sure we do the best thing we can possibly for you to protect you and protect your family. Once we know what the goal is, then we can accomplish it. Is that fair?
Sounds very fair.
You did pretty good on that mutual fund.
I've been, well, it's helped sitting into this in this
program. Now, let me ask you a question. Program. Explain ETFs now to me.
Oh, there we go.
Okay, this
he's pushing now on ETFs.
Okay, Vince and I buy a lasagna.
No. He's making me hungry now. He keeps talking food.
That was pretty good.
And we have a meat lasagna. Yeah,
What we're going to do, a mutual fund and an ETF are very similar in appearance, very similar. And what we're going to do is talk about that next week and how they differ. Is there a monster difference? No. Can there be a difference tax-wise? Yes. They can be a monster difference in taxes. If they're inside of your IRA or retirement plan, the differences are insignificant. But if they're outside of that, it can really make
also,
it.
The ETFs are traded minute to minute, where the mutuals close at the end of the day.
Word, liquidity.
Yeah. That's what I was trying to get into. Well, my favorite one is somebody buys a mutual fund on November 1st for $100,000, and it goes down to $50,000 on December 31st, and they get a tax statement next year that they made money. They said, wait a minute. I put 100, I'm down to 50, and now I owe taxes?
Yep.
Well, that can happen in a mutual fund.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can't happen in an ETF.
Capital gains is a perfect phantom income for you.
And there you go. Phantom income. Now, see, we're going to talk about that next week, because these are words that we're throwing this bait out here. So
we're going to make them come back next week.
Pay attention, folks, because this is important stuff. Right, yeah. Alan?
Absolutely.
And, you know, and 90, I would tell you, I would bet you that at least half the reps out there, agents, don't know about these tax consequences that they can get hurt on a mutual fund. And very often, mutual fund companies, they do quite a bit of trading towards the end of the year,
yep.
which can really hurt.
So they're required to pass out those. All those capital gains has to pass out to the shareholders.
Whether you owned it for a week, a month, or 10 years.
Yeah. So if you buy in at the end of the year, you might have a tax liability, and you only owned it for 6 weeks.
And you may not have made a dime in real money.
Exactly.
But you may own taxes.
We'll talk about Phantom Income next week, but promise me you won't sing Phantom of the Opera.
Oh.
You know, my favorite play.
Promise me you won't sing at all.
That's my very, yeah, I can't sing.
Mine too.
But that is my very favorite play. Are we done?
Yes, sir.
It was called Stop. Until next week, thank you.
When the light goes off, God bless you all out there.
Wait a minute. Turn off the on-air, and then we're gone.
Yes. Tech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martech is available at 772-678-7725.